Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.
Whoa. I forget the microphones. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today's Friday, finally, July 19th. We get to rest a little bit. I know I need the rest. I've been working my ass off this week.
Mm.
And you need some rest, right?
Yeah.
To rest that body of yours that's been through like trauma.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do this. What do? Do they like stick things in your body? It's pretty invasive, isn't it? Lipo?
Yeah, it was. I think the most painful part was him putting in the numbing cream.
Really?
Yeah, because he used like huge needles for that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was like that's somebody terrible. Just jabbing you over and over and over again.
Jeez.
Yeah, I didn't really feel the rest of it because I was probably in shock.
Yeah. Wait till you get an epidural when you have babies.
Yeah, if I choose to get one. I don't think my sister did one.
You want to talk about long needles?
Yeah. They should come up with like a new way to do that.
They should.
By now.
But they need to get deep, I guess. That's why.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's like side effects to that too.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I'd do it. I don't handle pain well.
Yeah.
So. I don't know if they do that if you're having a C-section. I think it's only if you're giving natural birth, right?
Yeah, I think C-section, they just put you under. No?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe, I don't know if you're
maybe
under.
Maybe they don't. I don't know. Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. Folks, we are on Facebook Live, as we always are when we have great guests in the studio. You can find us by going to LA Talk Radio's page on Facebook, and there we are. Otherwise, we love having you on audio, and stay with us because we have an awesome show. And I'm always in a great mood on Fridays because I love Fridays.
Yeah, Fridays are always good.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how are you feeling? You feeling any better?
No.
No?
I actually felt really terrible this morning.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My bags are crazy.
What? Under your eyes?
Yeah.
I don't see any, but okay.
I haven't really been sleeping, so.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know what's going on. I have my follow-up tomorrow. My skin is yellow.
Your skin is yellow?
Yeah, it's very weird.
Since the operation?
I just noticed it last night. I took pictures and I emailed them over this morning. I was like, should I come in today or like, what is happening here?
Yeah. Yellow skin, my God.
Well, she called me and was like, is any of your skin red or green? And like my skin is like yellow, so I don't know if that's something I should be concerned about. Because usually when I bruise, my bruises are purple, not yellow.
Okay. So you're like on the spectrum, all the colors.
Yeah. So I'm waiting for them to email me back. So I'm kind of having an anxiety attack.
Oh, no.
Because I haven't been feeling good. So I don't know if that's normal.
Normal. I think it's normal.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, your body went through trauma.
Yeah. And I don't and days. I don't think he did my lower back.
No?
So that means I have to do it again.
Oh, no. God. The shit you get yourself into, I don't believe you, no. It's unbelievable. So, yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't bring up any news or anything, which doesn't really matter. Next week, I have, late in the week, I have jury duty.
Mm.
So we'll see Thursday, and I'll remind you of that. And I've been trying to get out of it for a year, but they don't let me. So I'm going to have to go.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Sometimes you don't have to stay more than a day.
Yeah.
But I hate that uncertainty where you don't know.
Yeah.
And who's going to do all my work here? I can't figure it out.
I think you can survive one day. You'll be
but
fine.
But what if it's a week?
It's not going to be a week. You're not going to be on a murder trial, Sam. Like,
how do you know?
You're just not going to be.
You never know. If I'm
you're probably going to get a petty theft and be out in and out in 30 minutes.
Maybe. Like, or maybe they'll just say, we have too many people. You can go home.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. That just happened to my roommate.
Yeah.
He showed up and they're like, you can go.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll have to do my duty, so that's what I'm going to do. All right, enough of that. We're going to bring on our guests right now. We're joined by two beautiful ladies. You guys can get closer to the mic so we can hear you. And let me introduce you. We have Trisha Lee.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
And Angela Cohen.
Hey there.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
And you guys are responsible for the movie The Room and the Elephant. At first, I was immediately thinking The Elephant in the Room, you know,
right,
because So I was reading The Room in the Elephant. It's right in front of me, but I was thinking the elephant in the room until I stopped and actually looked.
So what are you not talking about that's happening right now?
Yeah, that's true, right? Nothing. I talk about everything on this show. Are you kidding me? No filters here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, none whatsoever.
Especially clearly. With her. Yeah.
She forgets
her filters at home.
Yeah.
But we'll treat you with respect and everything, so you have nothing to worry about.
Thank you.
So, first of all, you were sent to us by Catherine, who always sends us the greatest filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And if you guys, I always tell the guests, if you're associated with her, you have a high likelihood of being nominated for an Oscar or something, because it seems like all her clients are getting there, you mm-hmm. know, at least in the big festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So let's introduce the film, and then we'll talk about other things and stuff. But The Room and the Elephant, who came up with the idea, who wrote it? Whose baby was it in the beginning? Was it you, Tricia?
It's actually a really interesting process. So we're both members of the Alliance of Women Directors, and they had this program that they associated with Shoot 'Em Up. Have you ever heard of that?
No. The movie?
No, it's, do you know Moth Stories?
Mm-mm.
Well, so I guess what Moth is, which I haven't been to, is people stand up and they tell their real life stories, and it's like a spoken word type thing.
Right.
And so Shoot 'Em Up is taking it to the next level where, so people stand up and tell their real life stories, and then they get screenwriters to adapt those stories into screenplays, and then they get directors to turn those screenplays into...
I see. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it is based on someone's story, Kimberly Jensen.
Uh-huh.
And we had a screenwriter, C.M. Landris, who adapted her story and took her own spin on it and made it, took the essence, but made it quite different, actually. And then I was the director who brought it to the screen. So I did my take on C.M.'s screenplay.
Right.
So I did write this version, but that was the process that we took.
That led you to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
I'll say it's pretty personal to Tricia too, though, because when we went through the rewrite process and just breaking it down for her as a director, she really brought a lot of her personal stories, which happens in every film, right? You always bring a piece of yourself to that film.
Right.
But through each iteration, became more and more clear that this story was really a mother-daughter story that needed to be processed through Trisha's eyes. So our goal was really finding out what that story was in that adaptation.
Wow. So this was based on a real story that somebody told.
Loose aspects of it by this point. And
right.
The point in Shoot 'Em Up is it's like broken telephone, right? So you see what the story was and how it keeps getting translated.
Uh-huh.
And each person adding their own flavor to it.
Right.
So I believe the original story is on YouTube. You can probably find it on the Shoot 'Em Up channel.
Really?
And it'd be really interesting to see.
Like her just speaking it?
Yep. Telling the story, yeah.
Oh,
so what is the story?
Original story?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, no, what's the story of the movie?
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
So the movie is about a woman who gets some life-changing news from the doctor, and she has to figure out how she's going to break it to her 7-year-old daughter, who gives her a different perspective on the bad news.
An uplifting, enlightening perspective from a 7-year-old.
Really?
Yeah.
How long is the film?
8 minutes.
8 minutes. I know. I looked at it and I thought, is this just the trailer or is this the movie? But 8 minutes, that's a lot of story mm-hmm. to tell in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
How do you do it? How do you do it?
Visually.
Yeah.
With emotions.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, just cutting straight to the point. You don't need a lot of superfluous things.
Right.
Just get to the heart of the story and the characters.
Right. It's about more about the humanity of the characters rather than going out and elaborate scenes. And
exactly.
Everything.
Yeah. I think the whole movie is 3 scenes.
It broke down.
I
think it was actually 4 or 5, but it depends on how you slice it and dice it. Right?
It's a short film.
We had some company moves upstairs,
but it was all shot in one location.
It was all shot in one location.
Oh, wonderful. And who are the stars of the movie? Let's give him a shout out.
Yes. So Ingrid Rogers, you can see her on.
She's the mother.
Boss. She plays the mother. Yes. Uh huh. Brent Bailey, who is currently the new ambassador for Shell gas stations.
Right.
And then Lila
and
Bang.
He's the father.
He's the father. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
the little girl.
And then we have Lila Bang, who's a newcomer, kind of a little breakout.
Uh-huh.
And she's based in the Midwest. She was very excited. She flew in with her mom. We premiered at Disney. It was
how old is she?
Exciting. She's 7. I think
when we shot, she was 6.
Oh, she was 6 when you shot it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's a 7-year-old in the movie, at least.
Yeah,
so.
The character's 7 years old.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So the mom is dying.
I mean,
she...
Listen, if it's about 8 minutes, we're going to touch on everything.
Yeah.
It's not explicitly said, but basically, I mean, the backstory that I spoke with the actor about is that, yes, she has cancer. Or actually, she was in remission for cancer.
And it came back.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's terrible.
So, yeah, I mean, God, you know, this is like the worst predicament for a mother, I think, when you have a young daughter that may not even understand mm-hmm. what you're about to tell her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what you examine in the film.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And our goal is really to shift it toward that enlightening perspective at the end, because we didn't want it to be a, you know, droned on tearjerker of, oh my God, like, no, I don't think anybody wants to sit in that. It's bad enough that it's so prolific in the day-to-day of people having cancer and having to deal with this with their kids. So the goal of this film is, you know, to shed light on that, but more on how can we flip a script on the perspective and bring it from the little girl and show how, you know, there's moments in life. Well, I don't want to give it all away. But
yeah, that's okay.
Away.
But the thing is this, is that, look, people want to know, I mean, look, well, I don't know. It's up to you. It's up to you. If you don't want to give it away, that's fine.
It's
we'll
fine.
Dance around.
It's 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How much can we?
Yeah. Basically, you know, parents feel like they need to take care of their kids. And so when she gets this news, the movie starts off with her sticking all these sticky notes all over the place, leaving messages for her husband, like, oh, remember to do this, remember to put her to bed at this time, and all these rules, and just leaving her imprint, kind of, so that when she's not here, he'll have those reminders.
Right.
It's really sad. I can't watch anything that has to do with cancer.
But you don't know at the
top of the movie. She just looks like this neurotic, you know, sort of career woman who's putting post-its all over her house because maybe she's going on a business trip, right, or a vacation.
Right.
And she's like, oh, God, husband, get it straight. Yeah,
everything is, like, organized.
Pack the lunch, put the, you know, stuff in the dishwasher, like the basics. And, you know, and you see a few clips of those post-its, right? And then we get a feel for maybe things aren't going so well.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the point is that in terms of parents taking care of their children, sometimes the children might have the perspective that you didn't see.
Right.
And in the end, you know, it's like the child who's actually taking care of the mother.
Right.
Oh, wow.
In a way.
Yeah. Which is traumatic by itself, even though you don't have a choice. The girl doesn't have a choice, but I think that's what kids do, you know? They sort of like, they want the parent to be happy and to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do whatever it takes to preserve that for themselves, you know?
But she's not that direct about it. Maybe in me saying that the child takes care of the parent was too... It's more that her innocent perspective changes what's important for the parent.
I see. Okay. All right. So it's just about a different perspective, maybe a little more innocence, you know, less interference, less noise in our head.
Right.
It sort of alleviates the burden, right? Because as a parent, then you're going through all of these things. Well, what do I need to do? Right. Hence the post-its. But really, you know, the little one's just playing in her room. She's got this decorated rocket ship that she's really excited about. Mm-hmm. She's into science, you know. She's throwing animals, stuffed animals all over the room. She's packing up the rocket ship. And mommy's trying to give her this news. And really she's like, well, you know, what are you going to do until then? Like, what are you up to? Want to play? You know, and it's that basic, it's that simple.
Right.
And it breaks it down to that core of like, mom's got all these parental responsibilities. And when we forget to play, which is talked about so much in society now, right? When we lose that innocence of our childhood and become adults and we have all these adulting type burdens, you know, we can overcomplicate things to, oh God, you know, the world's ending. Mm-hmm. And what do I do if that tsunami or that earthquake comes and we have this preparedness mentality? And really, she's saying, well, mom, we've got now. You know, what are we doing now?
Yeah, that's very true.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a touching story, you know. So how did you approach writing this? Did you plan it was going to be like 8 minutes or is that how it just turns out?
I didn't start with a page count or a time count. I really listened to Kimberly's story, read CM's screenplay, and I tried to figure out what was the essence of it for me. That I could relate to, and that the story that I wanted to tell, and the personal aspect of it, which Angela mentioned. So my mom actually passed away from cancer, not in my childhood, maybe 5 years ago, and so, you know, just using elements of, you know, family and dealing with news, and you know, what would it be like to have to tell a kid,
right?
That kind of news, and how do you do it in a way that she can understand it?
Right.
So, in the film, the mother is a rocket scientist, and so the little girl loves building these cardboard rockets.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
And so she actually speaks to her in a metaphor about space, and Laika, who's the Russian space dog who orbited space, but Laika didn't come back to Earth.
Right.
And so that idea of, you know, going away,
not coming back.
Jeez,
how do you tell a kid something like that, man? And you don't want to be shocked, right? I mean, what if you don't tell them? What if you don't tell the kid and one day you just die?
It depends, because sometimes you get really sick. Like when my uncle got cancer, he looked like he was withering away.
You could tell
that something was not okay.
Right.
I think it's just kind of shocking at any age. Like if I'm an adult and if one of my parents told me, you know, this is what's happening, I it's hard at any age to tell somebody that. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather not know.
Right.
I'd rather just, you know.
As a kid or as an adult?
Any time. Yeah.
Especially,
Yeah.
Oh, I disagree. Really?
Yeah, I don't know if I could do it.
Well, I'll say that. My personal experience, my grandmother passed away when I was 12, and she was like a second mother to me. She helped raise me.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I would never have been able to deal with the scenario. I mean, clearly I get choked.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You're going to make me cry.
It's a Friday morning.
I know.
It's sunny outside.
You chose to produce this film.
You know, we all make these choices for various reasons, right? It was a personal story to all of us in our own way. But I'll say that... I needed to know. I wanted those moments.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that, but I think I would know. Because I think if like somebody in my family had it, I'd be like trying to figure out like, okay, so I don't know if I'd be like, so are we going to have fun now? I'm going to say, are we going to beat this now? You know, I don't know what I would do. I try not to think about that, you know, because I just lost my grandmother 2 years ago. She was older. You know, I was blessed to have her for 84 years. So it's not like I lost her to cancer. But when I lost my uncle to cancer, I still can't even... wrap my head around.
Angela,
that.
Do you want me to get you some tissues? You're getting like wet all
like
over.
I need like a pile of like paper towels. Give me the whole roll.
Let me get you some, okay? I'll be right back.
You're making me cry too.
He really just has to go to the bathroom and he doesn't want to tell me that. Toilet stories with Sam.
I know. See, that's why I can't watch anything like on Netflix or anything that has to do with subject matters like that. Like I started watching a movie with who's the actress whose mom is Goldie Hawn?
Kate.
Yeah. And I thought it was something completely different. And then they diagnosed her with like stage 4 colon cancer. And I was like,
thank you.
I just got invested to an hour and a half of this movie. And now this is where it's going. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And then you end up weeping for like 2 days. And you start thinking like, what would I do if I was in there? Just like My Sister's Keeper or anything that like, I mean, those movies really stay with you for like the rest of your life though.
That's actually why I love doing that.
Yeah.
Which is the message of this movie is, you know, whether we have some bad diagnosis or not, we have now.
Yeah.
And we can play now with our kids or with our friends or, you know.
Our dogs.
Right. Yeah.
And to make something that can stay with somebody for even a couple of days, that to me is like, that is success.
Wow.
To me.
Yeah. As a director, yeah. You evoked emotion. You made an impact. Yeah. And, we creatively came together and said, like, what do we want people to take home
right
from this movie, right? That was the most important thing. Like, everyone's been through it, sadly.
Yeah.
You talk to most one way or another on the street, yeah. Somebody's either lost somebody mm-hmm. or they've experienced cancer themselves. It's prolific.
Mm-hmm. Right,
so
right.
How do we change the conversation around that and make a social impact
right.
and say, what's going to brighten people up a little bit today? We've all dealt with it. It's right. not It's not new news.
No, you know? No.
And this is an uplift. As we're like all crying.
I know.
Like,
I know.
This is an uplifting movie.
This is group
movie.
Therapy, folks.
It's an uplifting movie.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Not expecting this morning, Lee.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
It's heavy stuff, but it's interesting, you know. So, I mean, obviously there's an uplifting part about it where I guess the mom or maybe both parents probably learn to take advantage of every moment that you have mm-hmm. while you're here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We see some beautiful moments at the end
yeah.
with that. And that was really my favorite part of making the movie mm-hmm. was it was a lot of improv. So it was interaction between Brent and Ingrid and Lila. And they just had the best time. They really got into it playing with the stuffed animals. And you could see them all light up.
Right. Yeah.
They felt the power of that synergy. And That's why we make movies, right?
Right, right.
To evoke emotion, to feel ourselves and to be immersed in the moment of now. Because you can't make a movie without being present. It takes all of your attention in that moment.
That's
and
true.
In society now where we're so distracted by social media.
I know, it's sickening.
Right? Things coming at us left and right all the time. Like, wow, to have to be, you know, it's like meditation, to have to be completely immersed in the moment in order to achieve that goal that you're working on. As a group together is actually really powerful because it's such a team effort.
Yeah.
And the whole group has to hold space for that. So everybody in the room, all the crew, everybody needs to be present. If everybody else is off on their phones while they're trying to do that, it shows up on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And for that scene particularly, I actually, I told the DP to roll, who's Brian Garbellini, who is amazing.
So talented.
To roll the camera and sound actually and we didn't call action, and so I was just like, okay, just practice, you know, playing, what do you figure out what you're gonna do, and we rolled on all of it. And that's actually how we got all that amazing improv and the light mm-hmm. and all of it.
Sounds exciting, you know. Yeah. How did you guys come to connect? You're the producer of the film.
I am.
What does it mean, first of all? What do you do as a producer?
Sure. Well, it's sort of from start to finish. Trisha actually came to me with this script, and to address your first question, we had met at a number of, I think, women's events throughout the city. We had found out that we had been in the same organizations, Women in Film, Alliance of Women Directors. We crossovers kept running into each other and just really got along, you know, and then learned about each other's experience. I had a film on the festival circuit at the time that was doing well, and I wrote, starred, and produced it.
Right.
And then Trisha also had done a couple of features and was wanting to make this film. And she brought, she said, I need a producer and I want somebody to work on this. And so from the beginning as the producer, I read the script and then we talked about how we could shift the perspective. Trisha had just made this wonderful film called Meeting Mommy, which was a short film of a similar topic, actually.
Very similar
topic, and it had done so well. It was part of the NBC Universal.
Somebody got sick in that one, too?
Somebody was already dead in that one.
Yeah. Oh, giving birth, she died?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I'm really good at guessing movies.
How do you know?
I don't know. I watch way too many. Yeah. Like, way too many.
It means she could write her own at this point.
I did write my own.
Right. You figure them all out.
Yeah.
Trisha, you need to get closer to the mic. You're basically in the next room already.
She's wheeling backwards a little bit.
You keep going back, and I'm like turning up your mic, but eventually it's...
Okay. Hi.
There you go. Okay. Because we want to hear you.
Damn, so, girl, we gotta write something uplifting now.
Yeah,
next movie is gonna be a comedy.
They're all uplifting.
Well, that was also the point of this one, right? So I came in and said, how can we, like, although Meeting Mommy was lovely, how can we make this different? What can we do to change this up? Trisha didn't want it to be the same film. Right. We didn't want to fall into the similar tropes. And so we thought, you know, how can we shoot it differently? How can we tell the story differently? So we really integrated back and forth for about 3 weeks on the script, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to both bring our personal experiences to the script and really dig deeper into it. And then to shift the perspective at the end, like, what did we want the tone of the film to be? How did we want it to look? Mm-hmm. So we really collaborated on all of these things. And then my job after that was, you know, we worked together. Trisha also helped to produce the film. And, you know, we hired the whole team and a lot of favors were brought in. We had some wonderful people working on this. We only had $1,000 stipend from the Alliance of Women Directors and Shoot 'Em Up to make this thing, which as any indie filmmaker knows, is nothing.
$1,000 a day? Or just $1,000 in general?
No, total.
Total.
It was a very bare budget film. And, you know, Trisha and I have both made films like this before. It's not the desired, you know, scenario.
Right.
Alliance of Women Directors has some wonderful relationships with Canon, with Photochem Processing Lab. They were able to offer some potential in-kind donations, which basically means the company will offer a donation to support women or so support the organization. In this organization's circumstance, women directors. And so we did have some pluses there, right? Because that stuff really adds up with the donations.
Right.
So then our challenge was, okay, we have to shoot by this date because we have to edit by this date because we have to premiere at Disney at the end of October. So it actually gave us a very specific timeline where I could come in and come on and say, okay, in this short period of time, I have this time to do this with you. Because as a producer, you're working on multiple projects at any given time.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm also an actress, you're auditioning. And right. Like that. So then we brought it together. And my job once we got on set was really to hold space for Trisha to really be able to execute her vision of the film, to make sure we got some of the shots that we had talked about in the past, to make sure the crew was running on time with the AD and make sure nobody died in the process.
Yeah. Everybody's in one piece.
Yeah.
Main job, don't die.
Yeah.
Don't be an insurance claim.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to director Trisha Lee and the producer of the film, The Room and the Elephant, Angela Cohen. And so let's talk a little bit about you guys. Are you an LA native?
I'm not.
Where did you move from?
I'm a transplant from New York, 3 years ago.
Really? New York City?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking a whole half an hour about New York yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah.
Can I listen back?
Yeah, you can. She lives there. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the differences between LA and New York and stuff. What do you think? Do you really love it? Like, we were talking about people either really loving it or hating it, right?
In LA or New York?
New York.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No. I love New York.
Do you?
But I love living in LA. I say my constant thing is my heart is in New York, but my soul is on the beach in LA.
Because right.
I need nature. I need water. I need the ocean. I need sunshine. And probably the only reason why I left New York was this. Like lagging 6 months of winter that was just weighing on my soul. I couldn't do it anymore. No, it was awful.
It's long. So. I'm from Boston, so I get it.
Oh, girl.
I was like, I can't. It's like literally cold all year round.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like sunny during the day in the summer and then rain at night. I'm like, there's just like no winning.
Yeah, you just feel like the groundhog. You just want to go back
there.
Yeah.
You know? It's awful. It's not good for you. So I'd lived there for a long time. I was originally born there up in the Bronx. And then I was a Floridian. My parents are from New York, so I grew up in South Florida near the beach. So I think I finally just really felt that pull to get back to the beach. And I said, well, you know, I'm in entertainment. Let's check out LA. And I love living here. It's easy, but I miss, you know, Trisha and I have a mutual love for Broadway musicals.
Oh, yes.
We've actually both signed up for the Pantages touring season here. Plug for Pantages. we're really excited about it. We're going to see Miss Saigon next week.
Really?
We recently discovered this mutual love for Broadway musicals. And
now we've spent all of our money.
All of our money investing in the next year of Broadway musicals. I felt like I needed that to survive in LA because I was missing this like piece of my heart with this New York theater. You just can't beat it, you know?
Right.
So we're going. We actually I'll tell a funny story. We recently went to Palm Springs Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Together. Oh. And we were in the room at night, and they were having this karaoke party at night. And I love karaoke. Let's just talk about that.
Angela is an amazing singer.
Really?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's why she loves it.
Are you being sarcastic or for real?
No, for real. She was like recording stuff in New York.
Oh,
she
really?
She was like legit. Yeah,
I know. I love singing too. I don't go to karaoke as much, but I have a karaoke set up at home, and I get to sing a little bit. But you go. That's the thing, though, about karaoke is when you're like professional, you feel like it's not the place you want to be. It's all amateurs, you know.
Not in LA, and definitely
really?
Not in New York.
Saddle Ranch. And people like literally go there to like try to be discovered. I think on karaoke
where?
Night.
I haven't been, but I might go check it out. Saddle not Ranch. To be discovered, but just because I really like good singing.
Yeah,
really? So people are good singers
in
karaoke.
It's like hit or miss in our hotel room in Palm Springs.
So yeah, so Trisha, being the giving, loving, generous friend that she is, so we're both zonked, right? We got up at 5 a.m. We drove to Palm Springs. In the morning, we had pitch sessions and forums all day long, watching films and you know connecting with other filmmakers and industry professionals. And then the festival's great. I mean, they host these really fun filmmaker activities in the evenings, and I was dying to go to karaoke. But I'm telling you, I look like you know,
yeah,
just
right.
One eye was hanging out, and Trisha was like already in her pajamas at dinner, like literally, like we're downstairs, and people were like, "Are you girls cool?" And we're like, "It's a pajama party." You know? So we went back upstairs, and we were like, "Fine, we're not going to force ourselves to do this." Out of nowhere, we had been joking with some of our friends at the festival earlier what our favorite karaoke songs were. Mm-hmm. This girl turns on Carrie Underwood, "Before He Cheats," which is her karaoke song.
That was my karaoke song. I love singing that song. And then she brings on, this is how she turns up to Broadway. She turns on Aladdin, A Whole New World. And we do the duet.
And of course I knew the boys part because I know the whole
song. Is this in the room or at the party?
Oh, in the room.
In the room. We had our own karaoke part.
We had a pajama jammy jam. Yeah. So we didn't feel like we messed up. Yeah. I thought that was like one of the most thoughtful things anyone's done for me in a long time. It was the sweetest thing ever. I will start to cry.
Oh, God,
soon.
Girl. Stop it now.
What an emotional moment. Yeah. Huh? She's like, whoa, every drop of the hat. You know?
She's
so present. That's why.
I'm emotional too.
I love emotional people because you're expressive, you know. You're not like sitting there like a robot and putting on an act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you connect with people. You connect with your emotions, you know. That's very cool.
That's what you have
cool.
to do as a creative in filmmaking, as an actress, as a director. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Right, yeah. You're an actress too?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing, is that she can cry on demand. How many actresses can
do that? I don't
know
if it's on demand.
It is on demand. You just bring up something, say two words to her, she starts crying.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I was thinking the other day, because I'll think of like fake scenarios in my head, like stuff that has not even happened, and I'll cry, and I'm like, I should really act. Like, honestly, like the other day I was sitting on the toilet, I was thinking about shit that has not happened. I was like making up scenarios in my head, and I was like crying on my toilet. I'm like, I really should get into acting.
I feel like you could be the one take wonder where they just take your shot of you crying on the toilet. And someone's like, I mean, did she have diarrhea? Like, what happened?
What's going on? Did she just have a bad day? Did her boyfriend break up with her? Did she drink too much tequila? It could be a lot of things.
Oh, my God. And she might flip on the toilet. She's going to flip Taylor's side. She had too much tequila.
Right.
That's true. But I will say, crying on demand while being in a different scenario, while reciting lines that were on a page verbatim, while knowing where the camera is. When there's 12 to 25 people around you, and that's a small set, that's a tiny set. We had 25 people on our 8-minute film,
right?
Yeah. Is a totally different scenario,
right?
You don't really get to be in your bathroom on the toilet, right?
No. Nope. And I watched behind the scenes of Euphoria, and they show like all the shots being made, and I'm like, that's insane how many cameras and like producers and directors are in one room for a shot.
I love that show. It's my new
so
obsession.
So good. It's my new obsession too. Oh, I wait for Sundays. I'm like, yes!
Why? I haven't had that experience in
so long.
Really?
So long.
What's it called?
It's called Euphoria. It's about high school kids that are like, all of them have their own story, but all of them are fucked up and a lot of them are on drugs.
Oh.
It's just so good. It's so shot so well. It leaves you on the edge of your seat. You're like, what's going to happen next?
And
I love it.
It flips the stereotype of what teenagers are.
Yeah.
And really goes under the hood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's great.
That's really what's happening, though. Like, that's what your kids are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Unfortunately.
Maybe I don't want to watch it, but my kids are grown already. They've probably been through it already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's probably They're why past I don't it. Want to have kids.
Yeah.
I don't know how a parent deals with that. I mean, I would never sleep.
No. My sister's coming out here tomorrow with her 5-year-old. And I had her order a backpack with a leash. And I always used to make fun of parents. Yeah. But like,
I feel like
once a week there's an Amber Alert on my phone in California. And then there was this whole Instagram thing the other day of some girl. She went viral. Mm-hmm. She was at Target with two of her nieces. One was like 4 and one was 2. And she said that when she walked in, she noticed this like big Guatemalan dude who was like 350 pounds. With this bright orange shirt on, and he followed around the store, but he had his phone facing her. Wow. So he was talking on the phone, and he would walk by them, and he'd be like, I think maybe 4, maybe 2. He was preparing to kidnap them for sex trafficking.
Really?
And I was like, yo, this is a real thing. And she did an alert. She goes, I just want to keep everyone on their toes that this is happening. It's like a real thing.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you hear it all the time about California, though, that it's happening out here.
Big problem here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In L.A., I mean, L.A. is, yeah.
I actually met with the sex trafficking task force in L.A. about another film that I was working on because it is so prevalent. It's terrifying that they have this entire task force devoted to doing this because it's a port city.
Right.
So you have it's an international airport. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
So what are they? So basically, I kind of understand it, but like when they kidnap someone's children or a teenager, what do they put them on a flight to another country and just like taken almost and just like drug them up and sell them for sex?
Yeah. And I'll say that another friend of mine did an Instagram story a few months ago of how she was actually coming back from a trip to China. And she was at customs going through a line and she saw this very strange scenario where this little girl was sort of clawing at the guy she was with, like oddly, like, and like she was on drugs, but just very uncomfortable.
Right.
And she's watching this going, this can't be like, and it occurred to her like there's something really wrong here.
Right.
And she locked eyes with this little girl and just this talk about being present and emotional connection.
Yeah, right.
Just this innate animalistic connection of pure fear that she had when she talked to this little girl, and she immediately ran over to security. Mm-hmm. And you know what security said to her?
What?
I could lose my job. I don't know what you saw.
So what happened? What's the end of that story?
So she, horrified, went back in line like, what? No, this can't happen.
Right.
Finally actually like found a cop.
Right.
Went to a cop and said something, and then the cops actually did something about it, approached the man, and then ended up taking the man away. And it actually had a happy ending. This girl, you know, was taken away from this man, and she was saved. But this happens all the time. I mean, you go to Atlanta, and you go through that huge international airport, and there's signs everywhere.
Right.
You know, if you see something, say something, not in the New York way on the subway, but in the children are sex trafficked through here. I think it's the number one airport for sex trafficking in the world.
Oh, yeah. Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Holy shit. Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a hub. We're going dark today.
Yeah. I'm like, this is stressing me out, my friends.
Jesus.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder too, I'm like, do I even want kids at this point? Like, I'm really cool with being a cool aunt. Or maybe like adopting a teenager who's got passed the psych test. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
or a dog mom. I'm a proud dog
mom. I'll probably just do that too. I mean, it's cool. Like, I would like a mini me just to be like, oh my God, you're like just like me, you know? Or you're nothing like me, just to see. But I always think about that too. Like, Gabby will tell me stuff at her son's school that happens, and I'm just like, I don't know if I can deal with that at all.
Wow. Trisha, tell them what you're a mom of.
What?
What am I a mom of? My films?
Well, yes, that's true. They are our babies.
I have a couple of teddy bears.
Yeah.
The bears. I have a bear family. They're great. You can hug them when you want them, and you don't have to take care of them when you're busy.
Like teddy bears or actual bears?
No.
Stuffed their cage. Stuffed.
Hey, some bears are friendly.
You'll see them. They're in the film. Caged bears.
Oh, that's right.
Shaking on the...
Yes, bear has a cameo.
Yeah, that bear has a cameo. Stuffed bear.
Yeah.
Are you, did you grow up here in LA?
No, I'm from Toronto.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I've been here about a year and a half, almost 2 years now.
Oh, so you're pretty new.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I love it.
Doesn't Canada have better funding for films, though?
Good
no.
question.
Yeah.
The short answer is no. We have government funding, yes.
Yeah.
We have one government.
Mm.
But here there's seven studios, many majors, production companies, financing companies,
right.
Grants. Like, I mean, I filled out more applications living in LA than the two applications that I can fill out in Canada.
Oh,
that
yeah.
puts that into perspective.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So you decided, how did you get into film in the first place?
Oh, well, when I was, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker ever since I was a really young kid.
Uh-huh.
My parents took me to Universal Studios and I saw behind the scenes how movies were made. And I came back from that trip and I was like, I want a career in media. My parents were like, oh God, what have we done? This is just supposed to be a family vacation.
Yeah.
And so from that point in high school, I took my dad's Hi-8 camera, which is totally dating me. And I made my first film, which was a documentary about street kids in Toronto.
Right.
Or homeless street youth. And then I went to film school and just never looked back.
Yeah. Jeez. Where did you go to school?
At York University.
Where is that?
In Toronto.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's one of the top film schools in Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Toronto. Have you been there?
No.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Oh,
I had a long distance
Ontario is in, where's that?
Ontario.
Whatever, so Toronto is in Ontario.
Yeah,
which
Toronto's
is a province
in Ontario.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
It's like LA's in California.
Yeah.
Same kind of relationship.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's like on the SAT, you know?
Yeah,
it's like Toronto is to Ontario, is LA to what?
Yeah.
Did you say you had a long distance with somebody?
Yeah,
a
relationship, and she was in Toronto. So every about 3-4 weeks, I'd fly up there.
Mm.
And
that's like a 4-hour flight,
it's
no?
It's a pain in the ass, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass to fly, but I did it.
Yeah. You gotta do what you gotta
but
do
ever
for love.
Since I decided no more long distance relationships.
Yeah.
Doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
But that was before Skype and all that, you know.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
But even though that's not enough either.
No, I know.
You can't
of course
have a relationship
not.
On Skype.
No, of course not. But people do all the time.
That's
what
I'm
these people. I've heard
you know how
people
many long distance relationships there are?
Yeah.
A lot.
People who've gotten married but have actually never.
They don't live together, right?
Physically in the same space. Like
which I don't see how that works, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's just so...
I need human touch.
And not only that, I don't even know how the show Catfish is still a thing. Because
oh
it's like,
God,
how are any of you still being punked on any social media?
Yeah.
Like, you've been talking to someone for 10 years, but you've never Skyped or FaceTimed them or met them in person.
Right.
You're an ass.
Yeah.
And an idiot. So it's just like...
Yeah, you're from another planet, right?
I think it's scripted. I've done enough reality shows to know when I'm watching some real shit. That's not,
no,
that's
but
not
I
real.
Mean, yeah. No, but really, Angela, a lot of people are, like, even my son, I just, he's in Texas right now with his girlfriend, and they keep flying to see each other all the time, you know? But not only is it expensive to me, I find that it's frustrating because you can't always be with them, you know? It's like you have to arrange it and wait till they come in or you go there and all that stuff. But let's say you go home, you want to snuggle or cuddle with them, whatever, they're not there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's frustrating to me.
Mm-hmm. My husband and I, when we met, we met on a cruise. And
wow.
Yeah. Plug for Royal Caribbean.
Over karaoke.
Yeah. I was singing karaoke, good memory, Trisha.
That's funny. I went on a cruise after I got divorced, my first marriage.
Did you?
Didn't find a replacement wife.
No, I did not, man. I was like so down. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why I did it. You know, I thought it would bring me up, but you go on a cruise, you're divorced, you're feeling so lonely and stuff.
I didn't feel
like socializing with anybody.
Oh,
I'm like, I'm stuck on a boat here for 7 years.
But that's
years.
The thing. You're stuck on the boat, right? My husband always says that to people. Like, she had nowhere to turn.
Yeah.
She couldn't run. But, you know.
So he cornered you pretty much.
He cornered me. Yeah,
yeah.
It worked out. He was spying on me. I was singing karaoke. He was like, there she is.
I want somebody to look at me like that, girl, so be blessed.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very blessed. But I'll say, to the point of, you know, long distance, he lived in DC, I lived in New York. That's a, you know, about a 4.5-hour drive.
Yeah.
Luckily we could drive, you know, we didn't have to fly.
Not when it was snowing.
No, girl. Mm-mm. Not when it was snowing. Mm-mm. So we took the Amtrak.
Yeah.
You know, and did that for probably about 4 months, and it was real. Like, clearly, I mean, we're married.
Yeah.
So it was real. It is real. But let me say, it was torture.
Yeah.
We hated being apart from one another, and we could FaceTime or Skype or whatever, but it just wasn't the same.
Especially like after a bad day or a long day or just a good day, period. I guess any day, really.
And it's not real. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you feel like, I had so many friends who had been in long distance relationships who were like, then someone moved to the other city and they broke it up.
Right.
Because they couldn't deal with the day-to-day stress of real life.
Yeah.
So we were like, all right, if this is really going to work and we're going to invest in this in our future, one of us needs to move so that we can see if we can handle each other's shit every day, basically. You know?
Right.
And it's also hard, like, right at the beginning of a relationship, too. Because so my husband goes back and forth to Toronto a lot, and I mean, we've been married for 6 years as of last week.
Congratulations.
And you know, because we've had that building time, you know, now, I mean, it's been like 2 months now, which is a long time, but you know, we have that foundation.
Right.
It's at the beginning when you're building that foundation. It's totally
different. What's been 2 months?
I haven't seen him in 2 months.
Oh my God. Yeah. What is he doing out in Toronto, girl?
Oh, he works there, so he goes back and forth.
Oh my goodness.
But, I mean, yeah. So
that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want kids? No?
No.
No? You're like, see ya. No, not gonna happen. No. You don't want any dogs? No?
No. No.
Cats?
Stuffed bears are just fine.
Bunnies?
Who needs all the responsibility, right?
Dogs are like having a pet. I mean, not a pet. Really? A child.
No, well, I actually think it's harder because dogs, you can't take them everywhere with you. Yeah. You're not allowed into restaurants. Yeah. You take your children with you.
Well, if you have a small dog.
This country's so racist against dogs and it makes me really angry.
Yeah. Who is? Unless they're small.
This country.
Oh,
California's super friendly with dogs. I'm really happy about California, but I gotta say, like, living in New York, it was a challenge to take your dogs everywhere with you. Couldn't,
right? Because listen, you're with a lot of people, you know. It's hard. I mean, I can understand people, you know, not wanting dogs everywhere, but like in restaurants and, you know, things like that. I don't know, but here, she's a dog person, she hates me, but
let me say my dogs are well trained. Yeah. Your dog is a representation of you. If you put the time in,
right,
your dog's gonna be great. They're amazing. Yeah. And they're, you know, they listen better than kids do.
Right.
So my dog doesn't scream at the dinner table.
Is it small or big?
They're little. I have two little 8.5-pound rescues.
Okay.
A huge rescue.
I'm trying to rescue a dog right now because I saw a video online about a golden retriever who was in one of the cages in China.
Are you going to tell like an emotional story?
She's going to I mean, I saw a video and
she's
I started crying.
Blinding, yeah.
I saw a video of him on the truck.
Oh, my
God. Then him being rescued, and then someone, his like eyes were messed up, and people were like, he's probably not going to be good around people. And then they showed him with his adopted family. He's like the most loving, cute dog. I'm like, I should rescue one.
Girl, they're like the light and joy of my life. They bring me so much joy. I love to take them everywhere. Obviously, I can't. I do get a little upset that I can't bring them to theme parks because they're like little kids. They talk about actually the brain of dogs and how it's very similar to toddlers.
Right.
They have fun.
Right.
They like Mickey Mouse.
Right.
Like, why can't they come to Disney World? I want to take them on a... I never want to go on a Small World. But you know what? I'll take my dog on a Small World if he wants to go. And I think he would really enjoy that.
Yeah.
But would Disney World be happy with that? No, they would not.
Probably not, no.
And you know what? I guarantee you I would not have to keep my dog on a leash like all these people have to keep their kids on a leash.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what Marcellus is going to be on.
Right? And I get it. I'd want to put my kid
come back
on a
over
leash
here.
Too.
Yeah.
And listen, I love kids. I'm just saying. I also love dogs and I believe in equality. Mm-hmm. So equality for dogs.
I wish I could like have a kid and it just be like seven. As soon as they came out of my womb. Yeah.
I don't think your vagina wants it to be seven when it comes out.
It just like spurts and grows.
Oh, God.
Or I have a surrogate, but then I feel like my kid would be attached to the surrogate and it'd just be like this. If we didn't get along my whole life, I'd be like, it's because I didn't birth them myself.
Yeah.
I've watched way too many Lifetime movies. Obviously.
You do. Well, folks, the movie is The Room and the Elephant. You should check it out. People can see it on YouTube, right?
Not yet.
So it's like a private, right now.
Yeah, we're premiering at the Oscar qualifying Indie Shorts Festival, which is in association with Heartland Film Festival.
When is that?
It's next weekend in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
And then we're also showing at Woods Hole in Massachusetts next weekend as well.
Wow, so you get to travel.
Well, the film's traveling all over the
place. No, you're not going with it?
We try. We've gone to
a couple. That would be exhausting.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we do our best. But, you know, we send our hearts through the film.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the next step for you guys?
Well, I'm writing a feature right now called Mother Daughter that I'm trying to get off the ground. Mm-hmm. So looking for a producer, a production company that can help finance it.
Yeah.
For so is that when you...
someone who doesn't want kids, she sure...
Yeah, yeah.
Movies about kids.
Yeah, clearly I have mother issues.
But is that an ideal situation for someone that writes a movie? Instead of selling your script, you want somebody to produce it and see it come to life?
Well, I'm a director first.
Right.
So I want to direct this film.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
So I'm looking for a production company that has
either
financing or experience to help with that.
Because
it's a feature film. So this is like
long. Like, and it could potentially go to like movie theaters or Netflix or Amazon.
That's the hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, ladies, we're totally out of time. You were asking me, what are we going to talk about for 50 minutes? I told you it wouldn't be enough, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it is. And believe me, I know. I've been doing this for a long time. Angela Cohen and Tricia Lee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having you.
Amazing. I would imagine you guys will continue to collaborate in the future as well.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, why not? I mean, she cries at the drop of a hat, you know?
And she's like to perfect. Make movies that make people cry.
So. Yeah,
geez. Have one audience
there
member.
You go.
Yeah. No, you got two, because I cry at everything.
Awesome.
You complete each other. There you go. Danny, thank you. Feel better.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.